Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Today, I'm joined by Anthony Strand and Ryan Rowe from the Moving Right Along podcast from toughpigs.com. Is that right, or is it the other way around, that you guys are from toughpigs.com with the Moving Right Along podcast?
Either way, well, on our show, we say Moving Right Along, a Muppet movie podcast brought to you by toughpigs.com. So that works. Think it's fine to put the title first.
Okay. That's exactly how you say it too, Anthony, with that same inflection.
Right. Well, I'm doing it.
Yeah, that was very good.
It's like muscle memory, you know.
On the Tough Pigs website, it says Tough Pigs is a website for Muppet fans who grew up. Our mission is to provide biting satire, poignant observations, and general wittiness in celebration of the Muppets, Sesame Street, Fraggle Rock, and the life and legacy of Jim Henson. How did you guys go down this road?
Well, we can't take credit for the beginning of Tough Pigs, which is that our friend Danny Horn, who later created Muppet Wiki, co-created Muppet Wiki as well. He started Tough Pigs in 2001 by himself. He was the only writer. It was just his personal blog about the Muppets, basically, for the first 5 years or so. Uh-huh. And so he invented, you know, for Muppet fans that grew up, he started the idea of kind of taking a, you know, the thing about biting commentary that, that sounds more like Danny than it does.
Yeah,
like,
that mission statement we've had for quite a while. I think we try to live up to that still. But yeah basically, like the idea of a Muppet fan site that is kind of witty or tries to be witty.
Right. I think Danny is effortlessly witty, and we try. I think that's it. I'm like third generation because. Ryan, you and Joe took it over. Our friend Johannes and Ryan. Danny gave them the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah, like the beginning of 2007. So Joe and I have been running it since then. We now also have Jared Fairclough, who used to run a different Muppet fan website called The Muppet Mindset. And now he's one of our trio of Tough Pigs owners. And Anthony is one of our main contributors. And Anthony and I co-host the Moving Right Along podcast.
But how did you get into all things Muppet? How did you find your way to Tough Pigs?
Well, for me, there's a book called Jim Henson: The Works.
Yeah, I think we have similar stories.
Right,
there.
Right. Which is the coffee table book from about 1993 by Christopher Finch. And I was always a Muppet fan. You know, I loved the Muppet Show as a kid. I loved Sesame Street as a kid. I think any adult Muppet fan loved those things as a child.
I think for anyone of our generation, that's where it starts. You're watching Sesame Street for as long as you can remember. And then you just get into the Muppet movies and shows and everything else.
Right. But the Jim Henson, The Works book, I was reading a lot of that kind of, you know, entertainment, glossy coffee table book in middle school. That's the kind of popular hip middle schooler I was. I was reading a lot of coffee table books about children's entertainment, but I read Jim Henson: The Works, and I wanted to see everything in it. Like, reading that book made me decide that Jim Henson was, you know, the 20th century's greatest genius, and I needed to see everything mentioned in that entire book. And now most of it is on YouTube.
That's amazing. Yeah, so many of these like obscure specials from the 60s and stuff that we never thought we would see. And now you can just go to YouTube and watch a lot of them.
Just watch them. Right. But when I read that book, it was 1997. It was probably a little earlier even for you, Ryan.
Yeah, a couple of years earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And at that time, it was like, I got to make a list of all the things in this book that I want to see.
It was a similar thing, too, because for Muppet fans, there's a lot of information to learn and hold in your head, and a lot of lists to make and stuff like that. It's kind of like the animation fan community, where like you learn who all the Muppet performers are. Like, I think the average person has heard of Jim Henson, maybe they've heard of Frank Oz, but reading that book was also like, Oh, wow. Okay. So Richard Hunt did all these characters on Sesame Street and The Muppet Show and Fraggle Rock. And Jerry Nelson did all these characters on Sesame Street and The Muppet Show and Fraggle Rock and Dave Goles and on with all these names.
And then once you're in it, you can't leave,
Yeah, pretty much.
So how did you go from that to starting the Moving Right Along podcast?
Well, so Ryan had taken over the website. Ryan and Joe were running Tough Pigs at that time, and I was writing for it. Ryan and I met through online Muppet fandom in
Yes.
about, boy, 2000? Is that about right?
I think so.
I
Yeah.
mean, we were young. We were both teenagers still, and
Yeah.
now we are decidedly not teenagers.
Wow. Yeah.
And so we've been friends forever, and we were both listening to a lot of different entertainment related podcasts back in the mid 2010s, like during the like when podcasts were really getting big. We were I don't know that we were like at the forefront, but we were podcast fans early on, relatively
Before
early.
Serial and Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which were like those were the two moments when I think the like the popular I don't know, the press sort of noticed like, oh, podcasts exist and they are very good and popular. Like, did you know that podcasts are something that's good? But yeah, I think we were listening to podcasts way before
Right. Mark Maron on the cover of Parade magazine with the headline
that.
Mr. Podcast.
Right.
But so we because we started doing the show in 2017 with the Muppet Movie 2 minutes at a time.
Yeah, and we should also say the direct inspiration for me anyway. I think we had the same idea at the same time. But it was a podcast called Star Wars Minute, where they're going through all the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. So every episode of that podcast is an in-depth discussion about 1 minute of a Star Wars movie, and it's really good. And Anthony, so I was thinking like we should do this with Muppet movies. Anthony had pretty much the exact same idea. Like I remember us having a conversation online where we were both like, "Oh, here's an idea that we both think we should do." And then I happened to meet the hosts of Star Wars Minute at New York Comic Con. And I just kind of said, "Do you mind if we basically just steal your idea, but for a Muppet podcast?" And they gave us their blessing. So,
Right. But we talked about it for probably 2 years
yeah, that's true.
before we actually started doing it.
Yeah.
Because we recorded a test episode in 2015,
Right.
which we've still never released, right?
No, it's standing by in case of emergency, break glass and release this episode as a
Right.
bonus
It
episode. But
is a 20-minute discussion of one sketch on The Muppet Show. So that was our test pilot.
yep.
And the other thing is we've been friends forever, and we love to talk out loud to each other, not just about Muppets, but about, we have a lot of shared interests. We're both big superhero fans. We're both big Marx Brothers fans. I mean, a lot of different Back to the Future,
Yeah,
whatever. I mean,
movies in
we have a lot of the
general.
same movies
Yeah.
fandom and stuff. And so we've always enjoyed talk. We used to talk on the phone, before podcasts were a thing.
Yeah.
And so we just decided it'd be fun. Maybe Muppet fans would enjoy listening to it.
Yeah,
And
maybe some people would listen, and people do listen, as it turns out.
yeah.
And currently, Moving Right Along podcast is all about the Muppet Christmas Carol. As you had mentioned with the others, going 2 minutes at a time. I'm trying to picture that because there are going to be some songs that are longer than 2 minutes. So
Yeah.
that part is just going to be about part of a song.
Right. Well, and even part of a line of dialogue, right?
Right.
Often in the because so Ryan, I don't do the editing of the show mostly, but also of the movies. Ryan will chop them up into 2 minute segments. And wherever that 2 minutes ends, that's what we stop discussing, at least theoretically.
Yeah, it's a frequent shtick of ours that amuses us, perhaps not the audience as much, but where a character will say something like, well, actually, we just had one where Fozzie says, "Look, my lads, it is dusk and the lamplighters are," And then that was the end of the clip.
And then we'll say, what are they going to do? What the lighters are what?
That was the clip that we were talking about for that episode. So we couldn't skip ahead to the following clip. So yeah, we just, it amuses us greatly to pretend like, what's he going to say? We have no idea. We'll just have to wait a week and find out.
Although, of course, we have guests, you know, on most episodes, we will have a guest. And they often just want to talk about the thing that happens right after that. And that's fine.
With songs too, them,
you know.
Yeah. If it's a musical number and we have a guest who's not coming back the following week, we will, of course, let them talk about the rest of the song.
Now, it's hard to believe, but The Muppet Christmas Carol is 30 years old this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I could be wrong, but it seems to me that this movie has just sort of snowballed in popularity since it first came out. I don't remember it being a huge deal in 1992, but it's a pretty big deal now. Are you guys finding that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think first of all, it's one of those things that in the theater, it did okay. I mean,
it was moderately successful. Yeah.
It was a moderate hit, a relatively cheap movie to make, and it made money. You know, it wasn't Aladdin. It wasn't Terminator 2 or whatever, you know, around that time. But it did okay. But then I think it's one of those things that everybody's parents or grandparents bought them the VHS tape. And so all through the 90s, it was on the Disney Channel all the time.
In the 90s,
you know? And I think it's one of those things that like every kid around our age, we say around our age, I'm 37, Ryan is 41 right now. So we were kids in the 90s. Everybody watched it, you know, maybe not every year, but like, you either had the tape or you knew somebody who had the tape. It was just one of those movies that like ended up on everybody's shelf somehow.
Yeah.
And then we all grew up and that's what A Christmas Carol is for a lot of people in their 30s, you know?
We've been talking about this on the podcast, how smart it was that we can see in retrospect how smart it was for them to do an adaptation of A Christmas Carol as this movie at this time, because yeah, it really did become something that people watch every year. Kids grew up with it. Now those kids are adults. They've gone back to revisit it. They're showing it to their own kids. So yeah, very savvy decision on their part.
Right. And I said people our age, but certainly it's people younger than us too.
Definitely.
It's people who were not born yet when the movie came out and grew up with it as a classic that had always been there.
Yeah.
And now are 30 or 25 or what have you.
And I'm sure if it wasn't a Disney product, I'm sure some channel, some streaming service would have it 24 hours a day like they do with A Christmas Story on Christmas Eve. But it's on Disney Plus. So I was trying to see if I had just remembered it wrong, that maybe it was a bigger thing and I just wasn't aware of it. So I looked it up. It was the 21st highest earning movie of 1992.
Right. Yeah. That sounds right.
There were two Christmas movies ahead of it, Home Alone 2 and Batman Returns, which is only a Christmas movie in that it takes place at Christmas
time. Right. It didn't come out at Christmas.
So it certainly, you know, it was the 21st highest grossing movie. It wasn't a flop, but it's just amazing how big it's gotten. And there wasn't, like, a Star Wars movie will come out and there's the merchandising, and it didn't seem like there was that either. I don't remember. Am I wrong?
We haven't really talked about this on the podcast yet this season. And now that you're saying that, I don't remember that there was very much at the time. I think there was some.
You know, it's funny because I feel like, and again, this is conjecture. This is anecdotal, but I feel like there's a lot more Muppet Treasure Island specific stuff.
Oh, there was a ton of Muppet Treasure Island merchandise.
Three and a half years later, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because like this movie, even by 1996, like was becoming more beloved. So it was like, well, got to strike while the iron's hot. We're doing this one. We're going to, because I remember there was like Magic Inc. Muppet Treasure Island book, you know, and
yeah,
like there was McDonald's toys. We still have a Gonzo in like a little boat, mm-hmm. like a water toy from a fast food.
A Happy Meal toy. Yeah.
Happy Meal toy. Yeah. And I don't think this movie had any of that kind of stuff.
No, I guess not.
And I don't know if it's because it was seasonal, and everyone wanted that Home Alone 2 license instead, you know, like Ken mentioned. Because Home Alone was one of the biggest box office hits of all time,
right? Yeah.
Up to that time. So Home Alone 2 is coming out. You're gonna get the Talk Boy going, you know.
Oh man, the Talk Boy.
Big deal.
Yep.
And I do love Home Alone. I don't love Home Alone 2, the movie, but I loved the experience of going to see Home Alone 2 in the theater at the time, you know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to search my Muppet nerd memory banks. I can't think of any merchandise from the time. There have been a few things since then. There were some PVC figures that the Palisades Toys Company made.
About 10 years later-ish.
Yeah, right? in the early aughts. But yeah, really not much when it came out. That's interesting.
I mean, I know now merchandising is so big. I mean, there could have been the Funko things, and there could have been
right
all sorts of stuff, but that wasn't around then. But I don't even remember like McDonald's glasses. I mean, that was a thing where there would be somebody would have special glasses, or it would have been a special Happy Meal.
Yeah, no, not for this one, I don't think. Yeah. I guess, yeah. You know, we'll find out as we continue to research the movie for our podcast, but that is very interesting.
The music, of course, is what I love the most, and Sounds of Christmas is a music station.
Yeah.
One More Sleep and It Feels Like Christmas are probably my favorites, and I play those a lot and get requests for them. Marley and Marley is growing on me. I don't know that I've played that yet, but I feel like that's probably coming this season.
Yes. Well, that one's not, you know, they're all Christmas songs because they're from a Christmas movie.
Right.
Something like Marley and Marley isn't specifically about Christmas, but I do love that one.
Yeah. And the soundtrack being re-released with Martina McBride's song, that seems like I wonder if that's going to get airplay now with the anniversary.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because it didn't back in 1992. And I don't know why that would be. I mean, I know in 1992, Martina McBride was certainly not the name she is today. Not even close. She was just really starting out. But I was in traditional radio. I don't remember that song being released to us at Christmas time.
Right.
I don't know if that goes back to the merchandising or not, but it seemed like that was almost an obvious thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Martina McBride did the end credits version of When Love Is Gone, which is like, that's maybe the number one thing that people talk about when they talk about the movie, because of this thing where sometimes it's in the movie, sometimes it's not. When it was released theatrically, though, in 1992, that song was not in the movie. The scene where Belle, Scrooge's girlfriend, sings it to Scrooge when she breaks up with him, that was not in the movie because Disney had decided that it was going to bore the kids in the audience, or it was slowing things down. So the Martina McBride version is still in the end credits, but that maybe that had something to do with it, where they realized that people wouldn't really have any attachment or association with the song because it wasn't in the movie. So why bother releasing it on radio? But right. Well, I mean,
the Martina McBride version of that song is in the end credits because of Celine Dion's version of Beauty and the Beast. Right.
Like, oh, was that kind of the beginning of that?
I think so. Right. Cause Little Mermaid doesn't have one.
Right.
So it's Beauty and the Beast. And then it's Peebo Bryson and I'm blanking on her name.
Regina Bell.
Yes. Oh. With a Whole New World.
Right? Yeah. That and was the big
like,
one.
And then it's like all the Elton John versions of the Lion King songs. And then it's Vanessa Williams, Colors of the Wind. And then that's kind of the end for a while. But yeah. So like, it's part of that trend where every Disney movie has this like pop cover of the song. But like you say, the song's not in the movie. So I guess that's why it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, but it would be interesting if they tried to push that as a, you know, for people to kind of rediscover and become a hit after all these years.
But so then here's the question is, if they were going to have a pop cover of a song that is in the movie, which one and who should it have been in 1992?
Oh, good question. I think It Feels Like Christmas
Sure.
1992.
Yeah, maybe, I'm just trying to remember who was around.
I don't want to say Michael Bolton, but maybe Phil Collins.
I was kind of thinking Phil Collins, honestly.
That would be good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that was early Mariah Carey. She could have done it. It was before her Christmas juggernaut.
Right. Yeah, maybe you get Mariah Carey to do One More Sleep, actually. One More Sleep Till Christmas by Kermit.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. Disney, if you're listening.
It's not too late.
She can do it now. Yeah.
Do any of this. Yeah.
Yeah. It all moves so fast. So when you're analyzing, for want of a better word, analyzing this movie 2 minutes at a time, what kind of stuff are you discovering that you had missed the first time around or the first 10 times around?
Well, there's always a lot of stuff because we are just looking at those 2 minutes and kind of trying to come up with as many things to talk about as we can. So we've had a lot of like, oh, I just noticed there's this one character in the background doing this, or like this obscure Muppet that we didn't realize was even in this movie. Some obscure Muppet monster we notice in the background.
Right. Well, a good example of that from Muppet Christmas Carol is there's a guy in the opening song, the Scrooge song. There's a guy with kind of big puppet with shaggy fur, which I mistook for a puppet from the Muppet Show, which it isn't. Our friend Jared was on the podcast and he pointed out that puppet's name is Mr. Curly Twirly because he was used on a different short-lived show. And that was his name on that show. And now that's become like a running gag on our podcast, is to talk about Mr. Curly Twirly.
Yeah. Like, why isn't Mr. Curly Twirly in this other scene?
Yeah. So stuff like that, where like stuff that you never would think about. Just watching, looking at every frame of those 2 minutes, trying to think of topics, you know.
Yeah.
Another example from a previous movie, Muppets Take Manhattan, there's a sequence where Kermit gets amnesia and goes to work at an advertising agency with three other frogs. And we discovered, neither of us had ever noticed until a listener pointed out that one of those four frogs has ears.
Multiple listeners pointed this out to us.
And so then that became it. We like talked about getting t-shirts made that say Bill has ears. We haven't done it, but you know, it's like a thing we talk about all the time. Which again, we've been watching that movie our whole lives and neither of us had ever noticed.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff like that just comes up because you're looking more closely.
One of my favorite things too is just noticing how many I would just describe them as special effects, like puppet special effects or puppet tricks, because certain things go by in a shot so quickly that you don't even really think about, wait a minute, a person could do that with no problem, a human actor, but how did they get a puppet to do that? Like, we just recorded one recently that has not been released yet, but there's a shot of Gonzo standing on a ladder, like about halfway up the ladder. I had never thought about that before, but watching this clip 2 minutes at a time, suddenly I realized, wait a minute, Gonzo is a puppet. There's a puppeteer somewhere with his arm, you know, up inside Gonzo. The puppeteer is not visible at all in the shot, and yet Gonzo is standing on this ladder, and you can see behind the ladder. So how did they do that? So we love kind of picking stuff like that apart and trying to figure out how they did it.
Have you noticed anything that, I mean, it's been 30 years. The technology today is so much more advanced. Have you noticed anything that sort of timestamps it as 1992? That if they did it today, it would be different, maybe better?
I mean, this one, not as much as the earlier movies. You know, the Jim Henson era ones, there's a little more. Just because this movie is, I mean, it's all shot in a studio. There's no location shooting in Muppet Christmas Carol at all. You know, the first three, they're outside among 70s and 80s hairstyles and everything, you know, and doing puppetry tricks outside too, which requires a different kind of setup. You know, Kermit's riding a bicycle. They need to like marionette Kermit from above. In the studio, they have a lot more control over a lot of that kind of thing, you know, just because they can control the entire environment. So I would say partially it's newer, but also it's studio bound. So it's not as dated. And I don't think the first three are like, you know, I don't think the first three have like laugh at the special effects moments either for the most part.
No, not at all.
But also I just think puppetry is one of the special effects that ages really well, because it doesn't look any different. Like, I mean, you would like, if it was now, they would erase some arm wires or something.
Well, that's, we've had a few puppeteers and even Muppet performers on the show. And that's, so we always love hearing from them about, like, here's how I think they did this shot in 1992. Here's how we would probably do it a little bit differently today. So there are a few things where, just because it's so much easier to dress a puppeteer up in like an all green or an all blue suit and then just digitally erase them later. That's probably the main thing where that was not as easy to do, where it was much more expensive to do in 1992. But right.
You would have had to paint the wires out.
Pretty much. You know. So,
yeah, when you look at something like Emmett Otter, which was 15 years before this, and it's charming and everything, but it also has that dated kind of look because just of the way it was filmed, at least I find that. I don't know if you guys do.
No, I agree. Well, and Emmett Otter has a lot of marionette effects too.
Yeah, those are the ones that stand out.
Which aren't, is uncommon for the Muppets, first of all. You know, I think Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas has more, and when I say marionettes, I mean like operating puppets from above with strings.
Right.
There's, you know, when Ma and Emmett are sliding on the ice, they're marionetted for a lot of it. When the squirrels are doing their number in the talent show, they're marionetted. But there's quite a lot of it. And that stuff looks, I don't know about amateurish, it's the Muppets, but it does not look as slick as,
well, you can just
like,
tell
a hand and rod puppet.
I think you can tell how they do that, as opposed to the more advanced stuff where we're just sitting there going, how did they do that? When you see a marionette, you go, oh, that's a marionette.
Right. And there certainly is a charm to a marionette, to a little tiny snowmobile marionetted from above in Emmett Otter, don't get me wrong, but I think that it doesn't really impress you as much. It's cute, but it's not like, whoa, like you say, Ryan, like, how did they do that? You know how they did it with the string, you know?
Yeah.
I remember watching Emmett Otter on HBO back mid late 70s, whenever it debuted.
Oh, so you caught it when it first aired.
And it was nice. it was fun. It was different. There's Kermit riding a bike in the beginning. It was really neat to see. And I don't remember. I mean, I was 11 or 12. I don't remember being hypercritical about it. Well, I can see.
Well, not at that age.
Yeah, but I just remember, and I'm sure that it's nostalgia now. But I just remember that it was warm and fun, and I thought it was great. And I've watched it recently, and it still has that magic, you know. Yeah. And I don't care that you can see the wires or anything. I don't care. It's just fun. They're sliding. They're going down Pa's old slide into the onto the river, and it's just. I just think it's neat. It's fun, and there's a ton of songs in it, and not one of them is actually a Christmas song, but it's fun.
And that's what I was going to say, speaking of the songs, is that special has one of the same secret weapons that Muppet Christmas Carol does, which is Paul Williams, who wrote the songs for both of those things. And he is, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that, like, Oscar-winning songwriter Paul Williams is talented. Yeah. But he knows how to write a lot of different kinds of songs. And, like, you know, I mean, Emmett Otter has like songs that sound like old hymns, and it has a rock song in the style of Kris Kristofferson from A Star Is Born that he had just written. You know, and it has like these like old jug band songs.
Well, and I've
they're all watched, great. Every one of them is delightful.
I've watched Emmett Otter with a room full of Muppet fans or like casual fans seeing it for the first time. And the moment that people realize that, so there are the two songs that there's a song that Emmett sings at the talent show with his friends and the song that Ma sings at the talent show. And the moment that people realize that the two songs go together when they start singing them together at the end as like an ensemble number, it's like just this dawning of like, oh wow, I see what they did. I see what Paul Williams did. The songs go together perfectly.
And that song, Our World / Brothers,
right?
They did a album of Muppet covers by like professional musicians about 15 years ago. Is that about right, Ryan?
I think it was around the time the 2011 movie came out.
A dozen or so years ago.
Yeah.
At this point. And My Morning Jacket covered that song, Our World / Brothers. And like, even without, you know, Jerry Nelson and Marilyn Sokol and all Muppet performers singing it, with like just like a band that I don't even listen to singing it, it's gorgeous. It's one of the greatest things ever recorded. Like,
yeah.
It's such a beautiful song. And they all are. There's a song in Emma Daughter's Jug Band Christmas about how Emmett's grandma was so fat that they could make anything they wanted to out of her swimsuit. And it's a beautiful song.
Like, yeah.
You know?
That whole special, it's just so charming and heartwarming. And like, there's nothing snarky about the jokes in it, really. It's just so sincere.
Right.
I get a lot of Christmas songs sent to me every year. Many of them are not ready for prime time. And a few years ago, a band I hadn't heard of had sent me their cover of the Nightmare, River Bottom Nightmare Band.
Oh, that rules.
And I thought, this is great. It's not a Christmas song, but this was terrific. And I emailed them back. I was so excited when I got it. And I thought, this is terrific. I can't really play this. It's not a Christmas song, but this is great. And I think it's terrific that, you know, however many years later, 45 years, that somebody who's in a band today wanted to record that song. Yeah. I thought that was, and that's really the power of the Muppets, that it just sticks with you or you rediscover it. And I think it's just wonderful. What have I missed about the Muppet Christmas Carol that you guys think people would like to know about?
Well, it's interesting to note that it was the first major project that they did after Jim Henson died. He died unexpectedly in 1990. And from what we've heard, there was like sort of a brief window where they kind of questioned, like, should we actually keep doing this without Jim being kind of the leader and the creator of the whole thing? And then they decided very quickly, though, that this was important to all of them. This was important to the audience to just keep going with the Muppets. And to me, the fact that they were able to create this movie and get it in theaters 2 years after that happened is that it's so good is really just feels like a miracle. And then it has so much of that Muppety spirit from when Henson was still alive.
Well, and what I was going to say is related to that, because I think truly, in addition to Paul Williams, maybe, and Brian Henson directed the film. It's his feature debut. Jim Henson's son, who was 29 years old when this movie was made.
Yeah, it does such a good job with it.
Yeah, I think it's maybe the prettiest looking Muppet movie. We've talked about that on the podcast many times. But I think in addition to those two guys, the key to the movie working is Jerry Jewell, the screenwriter, and that's a name that not as many people know as Jim Henson. But that's a guy who was the head writer for The Muppet Show for most of its run. He was the head writer for Fraggle Rock. He wrote five of the six Muppet movies, co-wrote five of the six Muppet movies released in his lifetime. He died in 2005 at the age of 67. And he wrote the screenplay for Muppet Christmas Carol by himself. And when one of the things people talk about with Muppet Christmas Carol is that it's the most faithful version of A Christmas Carol, right? That's a thing you hear. And what we have discovered going through it 2 minutes at a time and me going through my annotated Christmas Carol as we go along with it.
A very useful book to have.
A very useful book to have is that there's a lot of narration in the movie that is straight from the book. And there's a lot of narration in the movie that isn't. And that sounds like it is because Jerry Jewell was a genius.
I have honestly been astonished at how often we'll be going through a scene, and Gonzo, as Charles Dickens, the narrator of the movie, will have a line, you know, just giving some exposition. And I'll just kind of be like, okay, so Anthony, this sounds like something from the Charles Dickens book. This must be from the book, right? And Anthony will say, actually, no, this isn't in the book at all. Jerry Jewell just made this up. It just sounds exactly like Charles Dickens.
Well, that, and like often he will compress and adapt. Because yeah. Dickens is a genius, obviously, but he's not known for his brevity. You know, like Charles Dickens and Stan Lee, right? Like both known for using those a are lot the guys. Of words. Yeah. But Jerry Jewell will move the words around, you know, and take the most important parts, and then sometimes add his own stuff, often add his own stuff. And it makes the movie feel true to the spirit of both A Christmas Carol and The Muppets in a way that should probably be impossible. You know, and I think that's a big part of why it's lasted and why it's become such a classic, because it feels perfectly right for both of those things, which is almost impossible to do. Like they tried it again with Treasure Island, and it doesn't feel quite right for either of them. I don't think, you know, a few
it's
years
not
later.
The same.
No. So it's really impressive.
When this movie came out 30 years ago, I liked The Muppets. I wasn't a huge fan, but I wanted to see this because I wanted to see Michael Caine as Scrooge.
Sure, yeah.
And I just, you know, I have a lot more life experience now, know a lot more about, well, hopefully I know a lot more about, I don't know, pop culture stuff. But just to imagine that an actor of Michael Caine's caliber was going to be the only human in a movie full of Muppets, it's just amazing. And I can't imagine anybody else doing it, not nearly as well.
No, well, and it's very easy to imagine, and Brian Henson has talked about how they discussed doing a sillier, like, you know, the Muppet Show characters play the ghosts, Gonzo is the ghost of Christmas future, or whatever, you know, kind of version.
Right.
And you have to imagine that if they had done that, Scrooge would probably be a human, but it would be like a comedian. I mean, it would be Steve Martin or something as Scrooge, you know, I mean, Steve Martin was pretty young at the time, but you know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
it would have been a lighter performance probably.
Yeah. Maybe it's George Burns. I don't know. but anyway, the fact that they actually did get Michael Caine between his two Oscar wins.
Right. He had won an Oscar by this point.
Right. He had won one, and he won another one 7 years later. So it's not like he's in his like slumming it years, you know?
Right.
And they got him to do it, and he commits so fully. He plays it. I mean, he describes it as being like he's doing it with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Right. And you can tell. Like he never, like he gets jokes. He says funny things in the movie, but he never acts like the Muppets are a joke or beneath him, or he's just like doing something for the kiddies. You right. know,
I think that's another reason it works so well and why it's endured so much is that because Scrooge, there are a few other human actors in the movie, but he really is carrying the whole thing. Like, In previous Muppet movies, the Muppets had been the main characters. In this, the Muppets are supporting characters, and Michael Caine as Scrooge is the main character. So that puts a lot of the burden on him, but he just nails it.
I remember from so many episodes of the Muppet Show where there would be a guest star who would sort of break that fourth wall and look directly into the camera, and I can't believe I'm doing this. Kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
and I was almost expecting that, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, there are various different ways on the Muppet Show that you see actors sort of react to being on screen with the Muppets. Some of them sort of play it more straight, and some of them do that kind of like wink wink, like, hey, can you get a load of what I'm doing right now? So
Well, and they do that in the next one with Tim Curry, who Tim Curry is wonderful in Muppet Treasure Island, I think.
But it's a very, very different kind of performance.
Very different kind of performance. You know, during the song Professional Pirate, he says this is my only number, you know.
Right. He's mugging.
He's totally mugging. And it's like they could have had Tim Curry play Scrooge that way, you know, in that theoretical other version. You know, he would have been a good choice for that type. But it's so special that they got Michael Caine to come in and blow the bloody doors off.
Yeah, one of the best Ebenezer Scrooges of all the
absolutely
gazillions of Christmas Carol adaptations.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. I could keep talking to you guys for a long time about all of this stuff and get into, because the Muppets did so many other Christmas themed specials and
Keep doing Christmas specials. And when you add in Sesame Street, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
So what's the best way for people to find you guys?
So the website is toughpigs.com. That's where you'll find all our articles, commentaries, reviews, interviews, all that stuff. That's also where you can find the podcasts. We have our podcast where we cover the Muppet movies 2 minutes at a time. There's also another feed that is called Muppet Fan Podcasts with toughpigs.com, which is kind of a rotating lineup of podcast seasons. The one that just finished on that is called Hubba Wah, which is a Muppet trivia game show hosted by our friend Becca, which is that one is so much fun. Like, I think if you're a casual fan, it might just be fun to learn things from it because some of those questions get very challenging. But if you're a big Muppet nerd like we are, then it's fun to play along at home.
Well, and it sounds great. I mean, Becca does such a great job like producing it. She had like sound effects and, you know, like it just, my favorite touch is that every time she says Hubba Wah, she adds a reverb.
An echo. It, yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And that's a reference to Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, the outtakes. That's why.
Like as Ma Otter going Hubba Wah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and then the Moving Right Along podcast and Muppet Fan Podcast with toughpigs.com are both available wherever you would find podcasts. So Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Spotify and all those places. Mm-hmm. In addition to the Muppet Christmas Carol season that we're doing now, we did a mini season about a year ago where we covered all of the Muppet Family Christmas special. We did an episode a day for that for 24 days in a row for the entire month of December up to
Christmas Eve.
Yeah, so there are 24 episodes of us talking about the famous crossover special with all the Muppets in it and the Sesame Street characters and the Fraggles.
Well, and those episodes are mostly pretty short because we're
those are shorter.
Every day. They're about 15 to 20 minutes. So honestly, that might be if you want to check out the podcast, that might be the place to start, honestly, because they're like bite-sized. But that was a lot of fun. That's my favorite Muppet thing of all time. So it was really fun to talk about it in such detail.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us about the Muppet Christmas Carol, 30 years old, and Moving Right Along, taking a look at it 2 minutes at a time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. Station is still on, of course. In fact, the new season just started on November 1st. So if you're ready for some musical Christmas spirit, just head on over to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or the Listen Now page. You can also grab the app in the Google Play Store and take the music with you wherever you go. And I understand everybody is not ready for Christmas music in November, and I get that, and that's okay. We're here and we're up and running, and we're ready for you whenever you're ready for Christmas music. And as far as the podcast goes, we're now on over 30 podcasting sites. So if you didn't find us on your favorite today, just search for the Sounds of Christmas there next time you go by, and I'm sure you'll find our tree. Then you can subscribe so you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, the Sounds of Christmas station, or the Sounds of Halloween, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.